Hi, I'm Justin Mormon.
And I'm Katie Thornton, and this is the Reeducation of Schools podcast,
where we have open, honest conversations about how to better understand social-emotional learning, trauma-informed care, the whys behind student behavior, and how to help kids navigate it all as they go through school and life. All right, welcome to our next episode, The Gang's Together Again, Current Research of 2023 with Josh Ward.
Hey, friends.
Hey.
He's back.
On this side.
He kept yelling at us from off screen much that we're like,
we're
just
get in
put
here.
Him back on.
Put him in.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's what we have to do. Hey, before we jump into the conversation.
Yep.
Hey, give us a 5-star review.
Absolutely.
Right? Yeah. I'm getting more pushy, I feel like, as we go with this.
Now.
Right now.
Stop. Yeah.
I don't even care if you ever listen to this again. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. We actually really appreciate that you guys are listening. And if you do like what you've been hearing, if you felt like it's been helpful, giving us a 5-star review just kicks us up. It's easier to find us for other people, and it helps us keep the conversation going. We would super appreciate it. So if you'd be so willing, we'd love that. Okay. Gang's back together again. Current research of 2023. What we're really doing with this is we had a, Edutopia. Did I say that right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Great organization with a lot of research out there.
Second guessing myself all kinds of times. But ultimately, they put out an article at the end of 2023, beginning of 2024, about some of the most significant educational studies of the last year. And so there's 10 of them. We thought we kind of looked over them, and we wanted to chat about them. So that's kind of what we're going to do today.
I think it's important. Education. I love the first line in the opening part of the article that just said, for those of you who were hoping for a quiet back to normal kind of year, the research coming out in 2023 might disappoint you.
Yep.
Because education is continuing to change.
And if anybody knows that, it's definitely the educators, right?
Yeah.
So. All right.
Here's the first one. Let's roll.
This one
we're just going for.
Super. I'm like super fascinated by the first one, but I'll let you introduce
it. Yeah, this is more your wheelhouse.
Yeah.
Well, what is the first one, Josh?
So the first one is AI, right? The elephant in the room, and just how it's going to affect education and how we can, you know, we're going to have to jump on board whether we like it or not.
Yeah, sure.
So
I noticed my phone starting to pop up. Like, would you like to use AI or like even our Google stuff that we're using?
And then you just throw it out the window.
Panic. Yeah. I don't want that.
What happens?
Yeah, super fascinating. The article suggested that it's going to dramatically cut educators' planning time.
Yeah, that's a good way to...
It may just start writing our podcast, so this would really...
This is actually AI.
And we can clone your voices, too.
Yeah, so...
Nobody cares what I'm saying anyway, so that's helpful. But, like, it's pretty impressive, like, what it can do now. I think when I was reading it, like, the big thing that I thought and consistently always think with AI is that if educators are able to use it as a tool, that's going to be great, right? Like any tool you can have. But if educators start relying on it like a crutch,
right?
That's where the problem I think would be.
Right.
Yeah. And I think we just had an episode that came out before this about relational currency. AI cannot duplicate. This is like the program piece. It can tell you what to teach. It will never be able to tell you how to teach it.
Yeah. And I would say I've been dabbling in it this year and just figuring out ways to just help out. And it, especially working in special education, everything's so individualized, it's very difficult for AI to make it as individual and to understand the nuances of our kids. So I always think and talk to the teachers to say it's a good jumping off point when we're looking for ideas. But obviously you want to put your human instincts and human ability into that.
Do you think we'll ever get to the point where AI is writing IEPs and ETRs for us?
Well, man, that I would assume yes. And they already have things that are specifically geared for writing BIPs and IEPs. And but I once again, I think that you really have to have that understanding and nuances of our students. It's not just an algorithm where you can pop in characteristics and it's going to output some IEP that's, but it certainly can be used to cut down the efficiency on it, on writing IEPs.
It's actually time to bring out our next guest, Elon Musk.
Yes,
he's on with us.
Yeah. So I guess very AI, super cool, just with caution, remembering the science of humans.
Yeah, right? Absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think it's important too, and I had heard someone else talk about this, some far smarter than me, that it just pulls information. It doesn't say whether it's valid or whether it's not accurate or correct. So that piece is still floating out there just because it, you know, it pulls from all these different resources and then throws it in front of your face on a computer. Doesn't mean that it's research based or correct or accurate.
Yeah.
It's just pulling from all these different resources.
Yeah, it's interesting.
Yeah,
it's interesting. Second one. What's our second one?
Fascinating Guide to Better Quizzing. So I think, you know, the idea of testing with kids, they're actually saying that testing actually is good, but it's all about culture and climate in your classroom.
Right.
And they basically go down the line of saying that basically alternatives or variety is the spice of life.
Mm-hmm.
Have lots of variety in the ways you're, it's that formative assessment that we're using it as that quizzing should be formative and not always summative. That
yeah.
It's informing.
Right.
But I think veteran educators are not going to argue with this one, right?
Yeah.
It should be asking kids to share what they know.
There was a separate article too that talked about just, and I forget what the subject, but it was like a middle school or high school application where the teacher was just having these brief conversations, checkpoints of knowledge, as opposed to, hey, do this 5-question exit ticket, but just having a conversation and trying to gauge understanding. I thought that was incredibly authentic and very, in the moment, easy to do and just kind of go around and get a feel for the knowledge of what's happening.
I thought it was interesting. The one thing that I pulled, not the only thing I pulled, but like that idea of communal tests and quizzes was kind of interesting to me, that not just that we ditch individual ones altogether, but that there's something to be said for that idea of like communal understanding and being able to say what has been learned as a community.
Right.
It's always interesting to me.
Yeah. That idea. It also went into asking more specific questions and stopped asking so many open-ended questions for a lot of kids to really see if they obtained the content, which I thought was a little bit of a shift for me, and that the pre-tasting can also lead to reduction in like the wandering mind to kind of, for subsequent lessons for the kids can kind of see where we're actually zoning in and targeting. So interesting stuff.
Number three. Oh, am I saying something else?
Yeah, go ahead.
How tone of voice changes classroom culture. So again, like that idea of just the, that we've talked about this maybe in our last episode, even a little bit, like that idea of some of your paraverbal stuff. It's not just what you say, it's also how you say it and things like that. One of the quotes that I pulled from this article, like neither high expectations nor kind hearts can do the job alone. I think it's, we talk about this a lot, like the swinging of a pendulum, right? Like that in education, we're really good at overswinging.
Mm-hmm.
Like we are grandfather clocking it all the time where it's like, no, now it's only this way. We should only be high expectations. And then it's like, we should only focus on relationships. And both of those ultimately are wrong. And then like somewhere in the middle, right? Like can we be somewhere in the middle and have some kind of balance, I think is a real big key.
Yeah, absolutely.
That was it. I was done talking. Yeah.
I was going to say this goes back to Zaretta Hammond. It's not really her original work, but she's the one I think is most notably famous for it. It's the warm demander, right? So they talk basically essentially about the warm demander, that a warm, neutral, controlling tone. It unintendedly, an authoritative tone is too controlling. So it's that warm demander part, and that it gives students a sense of belonging, autonomy, and enjoyment of the class, that it really makes a huge impact. And I've seen this research come up again and again about the classroom tone.
One more thing. I said I wasn't talking. I was just kidding.
Yeah.
Our brains are so similar. Mammal brains in general are so similar, right? And this is always kind of a crude example, but if you think about like if you've ever owned a dog, right? The dog doesn't understand what you're saying.
No. Nope.
But it definitely understands how you're saying
tone,
it.
Yeah.
So you could be like, you're such a dumb little dog. Yeah. You're so stupid. And the dog's tail's wagging because of your tone of voice, right? Just like you could be like, I love you. You're the best. And it's like, it's like going to hide, right? Yep. So it matters. Like that thing that's something in our brain picks up on that and it really matters to us.
And I know you guys talk about this too, like with the mirrored neurons and creating that culture. If you're coming in all amped up and hyped and yelling, and the students are going to match that, or they're going to be in a state where, you know, they're not going to be able to learn because they're unsure of what's going to happen and or perhaps fearful, you know, is he or she going to yell at me this time? So I think that's important to note too,
which kind of rolls into the point four, which is brains that fire together wire together, and I think we talk about this a ton.
Yep, so you do.
Yep. I just, the mirror neuron effect, that is research, that science, seeing a lot of reasons to have peer-to-peer student interaction. If you're in the state of Ohio, that is required on your OTES rubric for teaching, that we want peer-to-peer interaction, that kids actually can support each other if they're working together to help better learn content.
Yeah, well, again, it's something that's going back to that idea of community, communal learning, right? And how that's kind of, as people, how we're wired to be kind of a tribal kind of community kind of people. And so if we utilize that for how we learn, it makes sense that there would be value in that, right?
Yeah, and I think even connecting with the second study here that we talked about, the quizzes and tests.
Yes, yeah.
And they use an example of, it's okay to like have a lecture, but then that's one piece of it. Then also maybe having small groups work together to kind of summarize what that lecture was just about. So I think that's a great way to get that. Now you're discussing and, hey, this is what I gathered from that instruction, and discussing other people's perspectives, and then being able to hear the way that others are thinking about it. We talk about it with math all the time, is we want our students to share what they're learning and how they're learning and how they solve problems, so then other students can hear that, and it's a good experience, and hopefully can be gained just thinking about things differently. So
yeah, that kind of pushes the idea of universal design for learning is getting different accessibility points with diverse learners in a classroom to help, that they actually can help and support each other for syncing up.
Who do you guys, so you guys are in probably around more rooms than I ever am. Do you think that there's like a group of people? Is it based off of like younger educators, older educators, more experience, less experience, anything like that, that are more likely to use different styles like of learning? And because I know everybody can kind of get into a rut of how they do it, but like, is there, do you think there, because in my mind, I guess I was thinking, I'd actually bet that people with a little bit more experience are more likely to diversify how they do things.
I think it goes back to the personality of the educator. There's some people that are so fixed because they've done it for 30 years. They are not changing. I'm teaching the same lesson I taught in 19, whatever. And then you see some young people that anchor back to just having to have a more stricter routine because they don't have the capacity. But then you have,
this is how I was taught to do it.
Seen young educators be way open to having lots of flexibility and diversity in their classroom. And I've seen more veteran teachers do it beautifully and masterfully. Yeah. So I think it goes back to educator personality type absolutely. And flexibility. Okay. Do you agree,
Josh? I would definitely agree. Because even when you were asking the question, I was trying to think and there wasn't a profile that stood out that
So I just wondered, because you guys are in more places than I am, obviously. So that was interesting.
Number five, Josh mentioned math.
Yay.
And some math picture books work great, and this makes my kindergarten teacher heart happy. And they're not talking about for kindergartners. They're through school. Math picture books should be utilized in the classroom. So there are a lot of benefits in terms of math storytelling, giving those real world examples, having something to anchor back to.
Right.
So we should all be reading books to children.
Yep.
Yeah, it turns out that helps. Sorry, I was thinking again, like, is it one of the quotes was in math picture books weren't a substitute for procedural fluency or mathematical practice. Typically, the authors noted teachers bracketed math units with the picture books. Again, it goes back to that idea of like balance, right? Like, we don't just throw everything out and then like all we're gonna do is teach out a picture book. That wouldn't make any sense. And so like, it's that idea of like, hey, find those balances. Like, we shouldn't go too hard one direction with almost anything we do, turns out, right? And then it's not surprising that it turns out making learning fun in some way is helpful,
right?
And storytelling, right?
We're always looking at ways to find cross-curricular, you know, like, hey, how can we link this to our reading lesson? How can we link this to our social studies or science lesson? So I think it's something that can support all different angles of students' education. So it makes it fun.
Let's hear this for districts. Let's invest in buying some picture books for our math classes.
And I would even say some of the, you know, the curriculum that I've come across has been more thoughtful about including books that align with what they're learning, especially at the lower levels. So it's catching on.
Yeah. which would be nice, right? Yep. It'd be nice if like that was a little bit easier. To, mm-hmm. It took a little bit less work. Maybe we could put AI on it.
Yes.
Figuring it out.
There we
and
go.
And then like they could, that could help us out a lot.
I bet that would be an easy task.
It actually probably would be.
Yeah, it would be.
Maybe we should do that.
Yeah.
All right. Six, improve student writing, reduce feedback.
Yeah.
I thought this was probably one of the more shocking research studies that I saw, because you hear teacher feedback, teacher feedback, teacher mm-hmm. feedback, that continuous feedback loop to improve student work. And I think this one kind of shook my thought process a little bit, but it makes sense to me. So they're basically saying that we should have high quality student rubrics for them to understand, which this all makes sense. High quality student rubrics with strong mentor text and some conferencing.
Yep.
Let kids kind of figure out and process some things together. I thought that makes total sense for me for writing. It's not a huge shift to what I was doing, but it really, that we don't need to be marking up kids' papers and giving that corrective feedback in the writing process.
Right. Yeah. Noting where they didn't have a period or.
Yeah.
So we, I've been able to teach in a writer's workshop model that really follows this, and you really get to see, how effective it is. The one thing that we always did prior to a unit was, as a class, we would come up with a rubric. And this was always after that we studied mentor text. What are things that we noticed from these texts? We wouldn't necessarily say what genre we were studying. We'd try to come together as a class to figure that out. What are some things that we notice? Oh, there's lots of quotations in this book, or there's characters, or this is written in third person. So then coming up with what that genre is, and then deciding on that rubric, and then letting students pick what they wanted to write. Adding those conferences, let's look at the paper, let's look at your writing. Does it match what's on the rubric? If it doesn't, how can you figure out how to make it match the requirements of what we're trying to get to a final product? Yeah.
It links back to John Hattie's work with that self-efficacy about getting students to take ownership of their learning and that student-driven learning process. So, which also ties into the teacher evaluation rubrics, right? That we want kids to be able to be self-starting learners and be reflective of their own teaching practices. And
absolutely.
So probably lots of PD that needs to be happening in districts in terms of developing and creating rubrics and the different types and styles for rubrics.
Yeah.
Definitely see a high need for that.
Yeah, absolutely.
But I think the shift too, it's like not that kids get obviously a grabby title. That's what the goal is, right? Yeah. But like it's not that kids aren't getting any feedback anymore. Yeah. It's just how are we delivering that?
Yeah.
And the thought process behind it, what's the value behind how we are delivering it? I think it's the big shift.
Takeaway, yep.
All right, new theory about the teen mental health crisis. This was an interesting one because I thought they obviously aligns with what we talk about a lot here, but in general, but this study talked about the idea of, cell phones, social media being prime suspects for a while now, but then also, a decline over decades in opportunities for children and teens to play, roam and engage in other activities, independent of direct oversight and control by adults. So not being like pretty much helicoptering, right? With kids. And then also said, dozens of studies suggest that happiness in childhood and then later in adolescence is driven by the internal feelings of autonomy, competence, and relatedness.
Yeah.
This is kind of an interesting one. I mean, because it is a big deal right now in just in our culture overall, like the idea of teen depression and mental health crisis in general.
Right. The suicide rate is up tremendously in this subpopulation. There also is a lot that we know that goes on in the brain, especially in early teenage years with another round of pruning that's happening. It's
pretty significant.
It's probably one of the more intensive areas of need of SEL and mental health support that should be more of a primary focus than getting them ready for high school in terms of academics because of the changes that are happening in the brain. When I read this article it literally made me change how I parented. I have kids between these guys, kids' ages, and just at the point now where my kids maybe could be out front without me watching them. And that was a big step for my husband and I to be like, you can go out front and ride your bike and I'm not going to be watching you.
Right, right.
That your kids are still a little bit too little for that. But like, I feel like I just got to that point where I was like, okay, you can be in the backyard. Just come get me if you need me. I ended up getting those watches, though. I'm going to be honest, because I wanted them to be able to call me, or I wanted to know where they actually were at.
Yeah. And maybe, and maybe this research would say, well, now they're not going to think of being outside and free without having those watches on.
Yeah.
Right?
So, maybe that wouldn't, that wouldn't register as being, I don't
but
know.
I do think giving some of that autonomy.
I got to break this away because I'm not buying them a cell phone. They're way too young for that. But yeah, it just made me think about like, you know, I need to let them go outside.
Yeah.
They can go outside and play with their friends. I'm going to trust that they're going to come back. They have some boundaries with that and some accountability, but that it really shifted the after I read this a while ago, like how we kind of looked at parenting a little differently.
Yeah, it's hard.
Yeah, it is.
I mean, it's hard as a parent, right? All three of us being parents. I mean, it is hard to be like, I don't know, like there's wild stuff out there.
Yeah.
And I don't know, you would hate, there's like the part of you, no matter what, I think, and I'm a pretty laid back person, I like to believe, but there's like the part of you that's like, oh no, do I want to be the person that's like, well, and then their kid was just two blocks away and they got
kidnapped
and
they got kidnapped.
And so,
happened.
And like, what kind of parent just let their, but then meanwhile, I'm like, well, I grew up, I was riding a bike, all kinds of,
all over
people
town.
People had no just idea so you where get I back was.
With, And it brought me to this story, and I was just talking to a buddy who has some young kids too. And he thinks about it from a parent perspective, but he read this book. What's the name of it? It's okay. I'll cut it out and put it in editing. So when I edit it. But the name of the author is Lenore Skenazy, and she writes articles for newspapers. And she wrote this article about how she lives in New York City. She let her 9-year-old son ride the subway train by herself. They had been every day riding the train to go to school. And he kept saying, hey, I want to ride. I want to do this by myself. I want to do this by myself. So eventually she let him do it. And he rode the train by himself. Nothing happened. Everything went fine. She wrote an article about it. And then like 2 days later was on the Today Show. One of the shows. Yeah, the Today Show. And it was titled America's Worst Mom. So, but it was just how that shift has changed in you know, even in the 80s when we were growing up, but how that perception of that child was completely fine on their own, but we, you know, can really restrict growth and some of that autonomy by how much fear that we have as parents that something's terrible going to happen, or the perception of other people.
Sure.
So,
sure.
Yeah, it reminds me of episode 16 with Dr. Julie Biddle about the importance of play and allowing kids that freedom to create and play in the day.
Absolutely,
I thought of me that. It ties all back together with that.
Yeah, I think also and it was just a quick comment there again about the cell phones and social media and people thinking those are prime suspects, but it reminded me of how, and I'm going to mess up the amount of years, but like, I want to say it was like 30 or 40 years, like how far behind we are though, usually, and when something new comes up, how long it takes us to figure out the negative impacts of it, but it's like we're way behind and it's not just now, it's always. And so like, I think cigarettes was like a good example, not that cigarettes were new, but like how long after we first were like, this might be bad for us. But how long it took for that to be like, hey, but for real, they're bad for us. Like, you know, it took like way longer than what you think it should have.
We already identified
social media, and I think technology, the jump that we've had in general, same thing with AI, go back to AI, right? Like, we're good about being like, okay, this is how we might be able to use it. What are going to be like the real negative impacts of this that we don't even think of? I mean, we can all think of some of the negative impacts of the social media and cell phones and having constant vigilance with where somebody is. But what are the ones that we don't even realize? You know, I mean, we're starting to see some of that, like how much more mental health like issues are coming up with, especially teenage girls who are on social media. Well, it took us a while though. We're like, oh yeah, and like the kids kept getting younger and younger and younger and younger. They were on social media, and then all of a sudden we were like, whoa, like this is a huge mistake. This is actually really opening us up to some big problems, like where kids can't, they don't have no safe place to go because they always have that with them. So if they're getting negative feedback from kids at school, it's like everywhere. You go home and it's turned off. Like,
or we're not letting them outside to go hang out with real people. They're only having these.
Their only experience.
These digital friendships, which it's way worse than letting them go outside and play with neighborhood kids.
Right.
Yeah, Absolutely.
And way less and
what
monitor.
They're not learning, what they're not learning interpersonally. Yeah. We could go on about this one forever.
Yeah.
All right. Direct instruction and inquiry-based learning are complementary.
Yeah. I am jazzed about this one.
Yeah.
I am a big proponent, I think, through the work of the Reggio practices that I've been studying in. It's basically essentially project-based learning. Just really celebrating that kids should have a balance of both.
Yeah.
If you're doing all direct instruction, that's not great. And if you're just project-based learning, free-for-all, that's also not great.
Mm-hmm.
But you got to have a balance in some instructional formats that support both.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
And I think it can be difficult as a teacher to plan for that, but how important it is and how much value you can get into that to have both sides of it. So I think it's great.
Yeah, and I think the tough part is that you probably learned best personally one of those ways or the other.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right. And so then you have to take yourself a little bit outside your comfort zone to do the other side. Yeah. And that's hard. And just like one way of doing it, you know, direct instruction is going to catch, you know, X percentage of your kids and they're going to flourish in that. Like it was my wheelhouse growing up, you know? So the world was my oyster. Like, right. That's how people taught, you know, by and large. Yeah. And I was killing it in school because.
I probably was on the other side of that where I needed more hands on and.
Yeah. And that wasn't maybe as much as what people were doing. And so it's just, again, like you just don't swing too far one way.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
It's such a big thing.
I think this anchors back to the idea that you have to work through Bloom's taxonomy.
Yes.
Give people base information.
Yep.
And then
what's the highest
level? Can't stop there. You have to let them analyze, evaluate, critique.
Yep.
Right. That's the application piece that we have to allow kids to do to actually have that higher level thinking and learning for our kids to excel. So it just reminds me of that.
Differentiate the product that they're showing their knowledge on and whatever fits with them. Sometimes it's an essay. Sometimes it's a shoebox.
Diorama. Yeah, I saw that. Yeah. So. Love it.
All right, number 9, Truly Massive Review finds value in SEL again.
Yeah.
Wow.
And I thought the most interesting part of this study, first of all, it's a meta-analysis. So this is not just like a little study.
This is
a massive study that, for anybody who doesn't hear us say this over and over again, MTSS is academics, SEL, and behavior. 1/3 of what we should be doing in schools is the SEL work.
Mm-hmm.
Very important. And this just kind of reiterates that again. Interesting wording, I thought, that they said it was better received because, as you know, there's some interesting groups out there that are pushing back on some of this, but it's better received when we say social, emotional, and academic learning together than just social, emotional learning. So,
yeah, I noted that too. I thought it was super interesting. And I think so much of that comes down to overall understanding. Well, I think there's like a way bigger problem in our society about like being like, far you hear the most from extremes of any side of anything, right?
Sure, they're the loudest.
That's who you're gonna hear from.
Yeah.
And so then like how accurate is any information you hear, that's also a big problem. But I think that people, if they know, once you start explaining like, well, this is really what social emotional learning is, and they're like, well, yeah, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
And you're like, but like what I'm not okay with, you're like, well, that's what it was from the beginning. You know, it actually, yeah.
There is a common theme that just the polarities of these different areas to research where there is like that needle swinging from the left back to the right in these extremes, but really the sweet spot is right in the middle. So
And really looking at building relationships, teaching empathy, and making schools inclusive and welcoming. Oh. And ultimately, most of our forums here are public schools. That's what we're doing for all kids.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. The idea of mindfulness, right? Interpersonal skills, classroom management, emotional intelligence. Those are all things that I think if we all of a sudden started purposefully teaching, which is what SEL is, right? A more purposeful, like, hey, we're going to do this for real kind of teaching of that, then that, I mean, that can't be bad. Maybe why people sometimes push back is because like we weren't taught that way, like overtly, we weren't given like clear instruction on those things a lot growing up ourselves. And so, then there's maybe just a fear of the unknown of that.
Yeah, and I think just it's an impressive 11 points scores have increased. So this is like a pretty drastic,
a lot of bang for your buck.
Gains for kids. So this is great.
And just think about all those skills that they learn when they go graduate and go into the workforce too. I mean, that's, you know, it can be stressful and it can be working with people that you don't get along with. So those skills that are being taught in earlier will really provide some skills later on.
Well, I think the adult world is kind of catching up already to that, where now that's what a lot of employers are looking for in different jobs is like, that's great. Like I can teach, because when we say it a lot, like I can teach you how to do the job part of this, mm-hmm. are you a good fit?
Right.
Are you a person we want on our team?
Yeah.
Like, then I think that's a big part of it. And for so long, I think that wasn't the focus. It's just sure. who's the best.
Who can make
this?
The
and
most,
you're like, well, yeah. but there's also other.
Yeah. We talked about that in one of our episodes, building a trauma-informed school, right?
Yeah. yeah.
I don't care what I'm asking you. It's how you're answering your mm-hmm. question yeah, sure. and your tone and your, yeah. you know, your character. It's more, I can teach you the skills.
The other stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. yeah.
All right. Last one. More evidence for moving past finding the main idea.
Yeah, I think this just anchors back to the science of reading that's coming out, right?
Yeah.
Again, that I think what this happened, I think in some states, they've gone so hard on science of reading, and I've seen huge improvement with my own child. I think we're all teaching science mm-hmm. of reading or supporting educators that are. But let's not lose the idea that it actually needs to be somewhat of a balanced approach is what this is suggesting, that we do need to teach a lot of schema and look at the background knowledge of kids for them to generalize and transfer over reading comprehension skills. So it just goes back to that direct instruction piece of getting kids the right vocabulary and knowledge. And we know some kids are coming in behind because of situational things that we're asking them, comprehension questions about camping. They've never been camping. They yep. don't know what camping is. right. They know what it looks like. Yep. So they're failing our statewide test. Mm-hmm. Subpopulations of kids are. And how unjustly fair that we're right. assuming everybody comes in with the same background, knowledge, and vocabulary.
Yeah. And I do think that's a huge piece to the comprehension is those experiences, the schema, the background knowledge. And what the study suggests is providing those rich literature experiences to provide those experiences that, yeah, maybe they're not going to physically go camping, but maybe we could take a look at a study or a camper's guide book to kind of give that experience or
set up a tent in our classroom,
set up a tent in a classroom
to see what that yeah. looks like. That's a life skill that I wish I would have learned earlier.
Yeah. So you have the skill now?
I think I can
she
make
watched,
it.
She watched somebody say
yeah,
it.
Yeah,
so that's basically the same thing.
Yeah.
I used to, side note here, I used to work like summer camps and stuff, and I yeah. can put up a pop-up tent in mere minutes because I would have to put up 30 of them because we'd be with like second graders that yeah. had never done it independently before.
We'll so. Actually link a video to Josh, yeah.
Josh
putting
say,
up a video.
Yeah. We're going to time them. Yeah. Let's time you and yeah. see how we can
we'll
set up.
We'll put it on
like...
fast motion.
A lot of bold claims being made here, so we'll find out how quickly he can really put up a tent.
Yeah. Insert the video here.
Yeah, right here. Click here if you want to see yeah. Josh put up a tent. Click here if you want to see Katie try to put
yeah.
up a tent.
Yeah. I'll just, I'm gonna give up and yes. grab a beverage yes. just so we're all clear yeah. on what's actually going to happen.
All right, so a lot of different articles. I think it's always good to look back at stuff like this mm-hmm. and see like what is the most recent stuff, because it's easy to forget even stuff from yeah. throughout the year. What are the things that are being talked about a lot? What are the things that we're learning the most about? What are yeah. the most recent studies saying? I think it's helpful to do that. What's something that jumped out to you? What would you want people to walk away knowing from this episode?
I think for me, I kind of brought this up with the first one with the AI. I think it's just such a big tool that's coming and it's more readily available. And I just think we don't have a crystal ball to know what it's going to look like in 5-10 years. But it's going to be here whether we want it to be or not. Yeah. So we might as well figure out positive ways that we can use it and to make our lives easier. And as a coordinator, someone that's deals with a lot of scheduling and email, I want to reduce the time that I'm doing that so I can be in the classroom and helping yeah. teachers and helping students. So that's, for me, that's a way that I'm trying to figure out. I just think it's fascinating. I love learning about it and I'm trying not to be afraid of it. So
that's good.
Yeah. I was going to say, it's really the educational neuroscience, the brain research mm-hmm. is the huge impact yeah. in our education. We can't ignore it. A lot of the study came through. I think it was affirming to, I think us looking at it, that,
sure.
The trauma-informed lens that a mm-hmm. lot of what we're saying is part of the current research that we need to be looking at these things as school districts,
yeah.
as school buildings, and saying on top of what the current research is so that we can move in a progressive way, make sure we know better, we're doing better. So yeah. I think it was kind of fun and it really shifted my lens on a few things about just really staying on top of what's out there.
Yeah. I'm kind of beating a dead horse here, but like, I think it's my biggest takeaway. There were so many of those articles, mm-hmm. like it's a high percentage of them that we were like, hey, don't swing too far yeah. one way or the other. Right. Turns out it's both of these things.
Yeah. Right.
Turns out you need both of whatever. I mean, that was over
medium.
And over
yeah.
again.
Yeah.
And I think that's good to remember. Mm-hmm. Just that idea of balance in so many parts of really just our lives in general probably is a smart idea. But I think in our world of education and how you run your classroom and how you communicate with your staff, whatever it is, I think being able to have a balance is smart and be aware of that. Don't find yourself or try not to find yourself always landing on one side of something or leaning too hard for one thing or the other. Like really look for a balance, look for how you can, I don't know, how you can connect to the most amount of people possible.
Yeah.
And you're going to do that by finding some kind of balance, some kind of in between. Don't let yourself get too swayed by like the hottest new thing and swing too far one way or the other. Look for balance in all things probably.
Yeah, that's good.
Hey, as always, we appreciate you guys joining us. It's good to have Josh back on camera. So he's not heckling us from off camera. So that's always
my favorite pastime.
Always a bonus. Yeah.
And we'll make sure that we link this article in the description below. And so everyone will have access to it and kind of, you know, read more into it. They have links into there to the actual studies so that you can delve even deeper. So
just a suggestion if you're looking how to implement some easy PD in our building.
Yep.
Look at this article, think about maybe talking about some of these things that are here. This is an easy way to not have you be an expert in anything, but just have conversations in your building about these topics.
Yeah, spark conversation and see where people land. I think that's a good idea. Yeah.
Yeah. So let's go out there and let's do the work.
Good. Let's do it, Josh.
All right, peace.
'Kay, everybody, let's keep the conversation going.
Like and subscribe below and keep the comments rolling.